Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. This is a SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired October 21st, 2011. I am Chris Shore, and joining me, as always, for these SmackDown reviews, Jake Barnett. And Jake will be breaking down the SmackDown show here in just a second. But Jake will also be joining me this Sunday for WWE Vengeance, the audio show for that, and that is exclusive to members only. So if you like what you hear today and you want to check out the post-show audio breakdown that Jake and I will be doing this Sunday, got to sign up for the membership page. And the good news is you don't just get that audio. You get access to all the audio that we have, not only a audio breakdown for every show, all the major shows each week in WWE and TNA, but any pay-per-views, as well as the .NET Countdown that's done every Wednesday by Jake and Will Pruitt. Those guys talk about the top five and bottom three things that's going on in all of wrestling. And very good show. We're very happy that they've added that to the audio that we bring to you guys. Then, of course, every Thursday is the flagship show, .NET Weekly. Jason Powell and I check in with you guys every Thursday with the news of the week and often have some first-run news. We did have the Scott Hall news this week, and Jason even did an interview with Justin Credible, who was featured in that E60 piece on ESPN, PJ Polacco. That's about a 90-minute interview. That's available on the site as well. Besides all that audio, you get access to the ad-free version of the site, the .NET Members Forum, the .NET Members blog page. If you're interested in all of those things, head on over to ProWrestling.net and look on the right-hand side for the ProWrestling.net Members Sign-Up page, and that will take you and give you all the information. $7.50 a month if you want to try it out for 30 days. $5.50 a month if you take the annual deal. Saves you $24 a year there. So, good deal. If you want to check it out, definitely sign up. Jake and I will be back on Sunday to talk about WWE Vengeance. But, Jake, let me bring you in right now and say this was WWE's final chance to sell Vengeance. This was their final show, their go-home show, the last chance they had to make people want to buy it. So I'll ask you, did you want to buy this show or buy the pay-per-view before this SmackDown? And if you didn't, does this make you want to buy it more? Did they sell the pay-per-view at SmackDown?
You know, I actually, just based on the hype heading into this show, you know, I'm not terribly enthused for Vengeance. I mean, we have two title matches that even the competitors involved in them, you know, don't seem terribly, interested in. And then tonight's show, despite, doing their best effort to kind of touch each of the storylines that are going to be on Sunday's show, nothing really compelled me to make a purchase. I mean, there was plenty of, as they say, storyline maintenance, if you want to use an insider term on this show. But none of it was, compelling enough to make me want to open up my wallet. And I think that's kind of a trend we've seen over just the past couple of pay-per-views. You know, they are paying attention to the stories, but, none of the stories are interesting enough to really warrant a $50 plunk down, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was the next question I was going to ask you is, do you think that the stories that they have going right now are of any real interest? I mean, they do have stories. There's a story for Alberto Del Rio and John Cena. There's a story for Big Show Mark Henry. There's a story for Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton, for Sheamus and Christian. For every single match, they've given us, some history. Whether it's short or whether it's long, we've got a little bit of history, something we can kind of, a thread that we can follow along. But do any of them excite you right now?
Not really, and I think I'm actually probably more excited about the tag title match and the U.S. title match than I am about either of the world title matches. And that's not to say that the tag title match and the U.S. title match are really, compelling stories, but it's just something new enough that it feels interesting to me. And as good as Mark Henry has been lately, and I'm not putting him at fault for this at all, the story with the Big Show has just been a colossal, misstep. I am not interested in the Big Show at all. He's dominated Mark Henry in every television appearance. And, the same kind of goes for Cena and Del Rio. We have John Cena, using that heel type attack on Monday. Del Rio, despite being in Mexico, was really unable to get any of his heat back on Raw or on SmackDown this week. So, the tag title and the U.S. title feuds right now are more interesting to me just because they haven't been horrible, not necessarily because they've been really good.
Yeah, it's tough to be excited about this pay-per-view. Jason and I talked about it on Thursday. I've written about it in a couple things we've covered over the past few weeks. Jason's mentioned it in other places as well. It feels like a taking time off pay-per-view. It's almost like, okay, we've got these story threads. We're not going to do anything to advance them in any significant way. We might do a little something here, a little something there, but pretty much so all these guys are the same players we've had for a couple of months now in essentially the same spots. There's some minor moving around, but, we'll just use these threads that we have and really be lazy about it and just kind of throw stuff together. So it's just hard to be inspired about this pay-per-view going forward. When I wrote my hit list today, I wrote in there, you know, there weren't a lot of misses on the show. There were only a handful of things, if that many, that were bad, things you can look at and go, oh, my God, why did that happen? But there was very little to be excited about either. There were, you know, it was a couple of good in-ring matches, and, Sin Cara versus Sin Cara, I thought, you know, considering what we were afraid we might get from those guys, I thought was very good, and we'll talk about it more in a second. But it's kind of the prime example. It suffered terribly from just a poor story, and so it's hard to get up for. The only reason that crowd reacted like it did is because it was two native sons, back, and of course, Mystico, the original Sin Cara, was such a big deal in Mexico just not that terribly long ago. We'll see what happens on Sunday. I think we're both in agreement at this point that they just haven't done anything to make me buy it. I would not be watching Sunday if I was not required to. I would not feel the need to buy it in any way, shape, or form. I would definitely be on reading our coverage if I didn't work for the site and have to cover it myself. That's what I would be doing. And I'm not trying to tell somebody not to buy it, but that's just where I feel right now. But let's break down what happened. This was the October 21st edition of SmackDown, taped on the 16th. That was this past Sunday in Mexico City, Mexico. First time that SmackDown has aired from Mexico, and they opened with Alberto Del Rio. Right after the opening music, Del Rio's music hit, and he came out of the ring to a really big pop. One thing I appreciated about this was that he was going to get cheered. There was not a damn thing you could do about it. When he was wrestling in Mexico, he was a babyface in Mexico, and so not only is he a native son coming back, but he's also a guy who was wildly popular there and as a hero. And so he's going to get cheered. WWE didn't try to cover it up too much. You could almost tell at times they were scaling stuff back. Audio would sound kind of strange. Certainly at the first part of the show, I thought the audio had a really weird mix. At any rate, they let the crowd cheer for him. He played it up a little bit, got in the ring and said that he was going to face John Cena for the title and vengeance in a last man standing match. He said he was supposed to face Big Show, but that wasn't going to happen because of this. Showed the video from Raw where he was hit, Cena hit him with the steel stairs and then counted to 10, and that really anticlimactic moment that they thought was going to be such a big deal that didn't work. He said that it had been his dream to compete for all the fans there in Mexico, but John Cena had denied them of that privilege because of his actions. He then said something in Spanish to the crowd that I didn't make out, and I don't speak Spanish, and nobody emailed me. And the crowd popped big again. His music hit, and he started to leave. When Teddy Long's music hit, Teddy came to the stage and said that Del Rio had been checked out by the WWE doctors and that he was perfectly cleared to wrestle. He thought that Del Rio was ducking the match. Del Rio said that he would make Big Show tap out if he put him in the match. And so Teddy ended up appealing to the audience and asking, do you want to see the match? And, of course, they cheered, and so the match was booked. And he got to leave to his music for just a moment before Mark Henry's music hit, and he came to the ring and waited through the commercial break. But Del Rio even stepped aside for Mark Henry to come through, which I thought was a nice touch there, something that didn't hurt Del Rio in the least and gave, you know, made Henry look like that the monster heel they're trying to make him to be. I was really okay with everything about this except for this continued. This is a lot of what they do to kill heels in WWE. Is Teddy Long comes out and completely emaciates them. They make these big sweeping statements, and then this little guy comes out and puts them in their place by putting them in a match and going holla holla and doing the George Jefferson leaving the ring. I don't know what he adds. That added nothing to Del Rio there. It made him look like a punk. I thought everything, the delivery, everything from Del Rio was fine. It's just that last little thing there, they always like Teddy to do that. And for me, for this viewer, it's something I don't care to see again. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, the promo was good. I mean, you know, he's in a tough spot being, you know, in Mexico City and getting the cheers when, you know, he's supposed to be, you know, the primary heel on the Raw side of things. So, you know, he did well considering that. He did, you know, play to the crowd a little bit, and luckily most of what he did to get cheers was in Spanish. So they, you know, the U.S. fans who expect him to kind of whip out the heel stuff might not even understood him. So I thought they did as well as they could, you know, sending him out there and having him cut a promo in his hometown. The, you know, the part about, you know, Teddy Long, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's something that they could have, you know, done as a pre-tape. They didn't have to do that in front of the crowd. It just could have been a 30-second thing that ended up on the monitor. You know, and it would have at least allowed, you know, Del Rio to get his grand exit to his own music and whatnot. But the segment worked, and as far as it booked the match for later in the show, but, I mean, what we'll find out later is that might not have been the best thing anyway. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I mean, let's consider, you know, he is in front of his hometown crowd, and so you know there's going to be shenanigans. But even more importantly than that, you know, this is go-home week for the pay-per-view. And so, you know, we've seen him three times, essentially, or I guess four times, but the last time we see him on Raw was completely laid the hell out with a 10 count being counted over top of him by Superman. Then he gets embarrassed here, and then, we'll, you know, as we see in how the main event goes down and just the match itself and the finish and everything about it, he just doesn't look, I mean, really, as much as we complained about Miz kind of being the chicken shit heel, I mean, can you think of a heel that's been booked weaker than Del Rio? I mean, it's been a long time since, I mean, this guy just cannot get anything going. They give him a win, they give him a strong win, give him somebody to tap out, and then it's like, you know, and he just gets destroyed for the next 3 weeks. What are they doing with him?
It's hard to say. He's booked a lot like maybe like a Chris Jericho or a Rey Mysterio were booked in their, you know, in their world title runs. You know, he's good on the mic, and so he's able to get some heat back after these losses. But he's just not booked to win very much. And even when he does win, it's generally in these, you know, very cheap fashion. You know, locking Cena out of the cage or Ricardo interfering from the outside, allowing him to, you know, pull one over. So he's not booked very strong. And the reasoning behind that, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, that's something that, you know, somebody in creative would have to justify. But he definitely has taken a strange turn for a guy who was booked as probably the strongest heel in the company for almost an entire year there. So I'm not sure what the point of this is. Maybe they're just trying to draw, you know, a distinct difference between him and maybe some of the monster heels like Henry and Brodus Clay, who's coming back. But I don't think it's helping him, because he was a much stronger character when he was getting clean wins and actually, you know, getting the best of a face every once in a while, which is something that we don't see often enough in WWE at all anymore.
We got a little hype for Sin Cara versus Sin Cara, and then after a commercial, we had Mark in the first match of the night, Mark Henry defeating John Morrison at 3 minutes and 19 seconds. Morrison getting an outstanding, let's just go ahead and get it out of our system. I did end up writing this later in my review as well. Everybody got a good pop on the show. I mean, Mexico was happy to have, or Mexico City at least, was happy to have WWE in attendance. I mean, even the heels barely got booed. Everybody was just happy to be seen. Is that what you got watching as well?
Yeah, it was just a generally, a lively crowd. And it's nice, when they can get big reactions for people, when they travel internationally, just because it gives us a nice change of pace from the oftentimes kind of boring crowds we get in the U.S., and then you have the really heel-heavy crowds that, you know, heels get cheered in Canada and the U.K., so it's nice to hear a lively crowd that's actually just excited to watch wrestling, which is what we seem to have gotten tonight.
At one moment I was almost put in my place a little bit. I was like, wow, you know, I kind of take this for granted that, you know, I get to watch this anytime I want live. I mean, it's always around me. There's always a show to go to, and these guys don't get to see them very often. And granted, I don't get to see WWE live all that often, but it's you know, it's even less so there. So maybe I should learn to take things a little bit better. But this was a good match. Again, Henry defeating Morrison 3 minutes, 19 seconds. It was pretty much so just a replay of the Raw match that they had this week or last week, whichever it was. You know, Morrison got in some good offense, got the chuck kick, which sent Henry to the ground, got in the running knee, even hit Starship Hay and hit it good, I thought, which is something he even rarely does. Shame for him that Henry immediately powered out of that and then did the same exact finish just about as they did with the Raw match. He popped Morrison up in the air, called him, hit the World's Strongest Slam, into the match. I mean, it's a 3-minute match. It is what it is in that sense. I thought Morrison looked as good as he could in defeat, but it was pretty much just a retread of Raw, was it not?
Yeah, I mean, they had a Raw match a couple of weeks ago, and then they were involved in that tag match on Monday, and then we had this match last night. So it's all basically the same formula, and it was pretty much expected considering, you know, Morrison has nothing going on at the pay-per-view, and Henry's heading into a big title match. So the squash part of it didn't bother me. I thought Morrison looked pretty good in defeat. You know, he got in some decent offense, and Henry actually did a very nice job of selling it for him up until the point where he just kind of powered out of the finisher at like a 1 or maybe 1.5. But up until that point, he had really kind of sold the impacts pretty well, and the neat spot that was the World's Strongest Slam at the end was fun, even though it was a retread. So I actually kind of enjoyed this match because I missed part of the Monday's match, and I missed that cool finish. I had to go watch it on YouTube, so it was kind of neat to see it again, and I'm really enjoying Henry right now, and there's a lot of promise out there for Morrison, but I think he's got some things to work through before they're going to give him that push again.
Yeah, I wonder if Morrison's not done. His contract's coming up soon. There seems to be all the rumbling in the world that he's going to go away. It'd be interesting to see where he lands from there. I don't know. I think about TNA and him. I think about ROH and him. I just think of all these different companies, and I don't know if there's a place for John Morrison in a smaller group. I think he kind of needs the glitz and glamour of WWE. So, you know, I hope that it's just rumor and that he's going to re-sign or has re-signed, and we just don't know about it yet. So I think he needs that. But, yeah, I mean, it was a good match. It was a 3-minute match. It is what it is. It's always tough for me to call 3-minute matches good because it's friggin' 3 minutes. And, you know, there's a place for squash matches. I believe in that with enhancement talent. This is kind of an enhancement plus type match, if you will. It's standard fare, like you said. You give the heel a good win going into the pay-per-view to make him look strong. And he needed that for what he got later in the show, that's for sure. We'll just have to see what happens with Morrison, see if he's gotten his head out of his butt and got all his backstage problems cleared up. And hopefully we'll continue to see him. If not, we're going to find out exactly how good he is. And I think he's going to be treated differently at different levels. We had a graphic, and I should go ahead at this point and point out, I should have said at the beginning, but all the graphics on the show were shown in both Spanish and English. I believe every time that I saw, at least, it was Spanish first, followed by the English translation of it. And I guess it's a nice touch, but it's like, just because you're in Mexico City, that seems, I mean, I don't know, that if they ever record one in Germany or whatever, they're going to put it up in German on the screen? I don't think they would, but anyway, I guess it was a nice touch. It didn't mean a whole lot to me. I just kind of shrugged my shoulders at it. I mean, do you think it was a big deal if they did that?
I don't know if it was a big deal. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot more opportunity for WWE to expand into Mexico than perhaps Europe or Asia. So, you know, it might not be a bad thing for them to start catering to that audience, especially with slumping ratings and pay-per-view buys and things of that nature. I mean, I know that they're pretty intensely trying to get on pay-per-view in Mexico. So, you know, perhaps this is more, you know, just more inklings that kind of the direction they're going. But I mean, I don't think it hurt anything. I mean, it didn't really mean anything to me, but I could see why it would be important to, you know, fans who are not generally catered to on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, I'm not against the idea as a whole or that sort of thing. I guess my point was that you're only going to do it when you're in Mexico. You know, I mean, if it's something that you're trying to reach out to another segment of the audience, so you do it every time, okay, I'm more okay with that than just, well, hey, just this one time, because we happen to be in Mexico, we'll show a little Spanish. I don't know, maybe it's just me. To me, it's just kind of a, okay.
Something on the tape broadcast that they that they probably cut in native language graphics, but maybe they don't. I guess they don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's for us to see it on the English, I mean, certainly if you're broadcasting it and when you do a different graphic there, that makes sense. But if you're going to do both, then why just do it this one time? I guess that's kind of my point. But after the commercial, we went backstage. Christian and Vicky Guerrero were back there. Christian was asking Vicky how to say one more match in Spanish. Vicky acted like she didn't know how to speak Spanish, which was the most, we've seen her do it on friggin' SmackDown, for Christ's sakes. I mean, that was just stupid. She got out there, that one was Uno and four was Boss, and Christian interrupted, and by the time Teddy Long came in, and Christian said that he wanted his one more match. Teddy, and what I thought was another huge mistake on his part, and not necessarily blaming him, but just he was the messenger of the mistake, said, "I'm going to give you exactly what you want, Christian, one more match with Sheamus at Vengeance." And Christian got all bent out of shape and stormed out. I think the problem here is pointing out that we're going to get Sheamus and Christian, and frame it as we're going to get Sheamus and Christian again. It's the one more match thing shows he's had too many matches. So when you tie that into a feud, you go, that makes the feud seem like it's been going on for too long. I don't think anybody thought that through. Teddy turned his attention to Vicky at that point and said that since Vicky got what she wanted with the tag title match, he was going to get what he wanted, and that was going to be that Dolph Ziggler had to defend the U.S. title against Zack Ryder in Vengeance. And at Vengeance, Vicky then said, that means I have to pull double duty? And Teddy said, yes, that's correct, or you've got it, or something kind of thing like that, and gave the holla holla and walked off. Zack Ryder popped in the screen, gave his woo 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 catchphrase and popped out, and then Vicky did her screaming and, jumping up and down and acting a banshee gimmick. Again, Teddy Long was the problem in this segment, not so much him in particular, but his lines were the problem here. The good news coming out of this is that if there's any one person on the roster right now that I wouldn't mind sitting through twice, it's Dolph Ziggler. So I'm okay. If you're going to have somebody do it, he's the guy I would pick. So I'm interested to see what he can do. I think it's a real opportunity for him to shine. I think he's a guy who's got a lot of money written on him. His promo he had on Raw here recently was very good, and he just needs more of that, more exposure, and I think he's going to be in good shape. But this, the whole thing with pointing out that it was one more time and Vicky not being able to speak Spanish, couldn't they have done this without the stupidity running through it?
Yeah, that was just, patronizing. Because anybody who has any kind of memory at all knows that, Vicky has spoken quite fluent Spanish on WWE TV in the past. So the whole joke just kind of came off as mean-spirited in a way. They wanted to do the heel thing because they were in Mexico, but it was just kind of strange, and I don't think it worked. But the thing that really confused me about the segment was that I don't know why Teddy Long is making U.S. title matches when that title isn't even on his show. Are we doing a brand split anymore, or is this completely over? And why do we have two GMs if that's the case? I guess that's the part that kind of confused me about it. I'm not upset that Ziggler's in two matches. He's definitely capable of it. I'm happy to see Zack Ryder on pay-per-view. I think the tag match and the U.S. title match might, be two of the freshest matches on the show. They have a lot of, I think there's a lot of fun and excitement you can get out of that. But that whole thing with Teddy Long was just bizarre, and I don't think it worked at all.
Yeah, I guess the argument is that when Triple H came in as COO, I think at some point, because I even said something about why the hell is Teddy Long making these matches, and somebody said, it happened on Raw one day. He said, or Triple H, somebody said it was okay for Teddy to make matches. But now John Laurinaitis is running Raw, so is it still okay for Teddy to make matches? And if so, wouldn't Hunter exploit that? The whole thing just is, it just shows you how there's no thought process from one step to the next. And just real quick, I want to jump in here and say that anytime we're complaining about creative, I hope everybody understands that we're not necessarily picking on the writers. As I said on .NET Weekly on Thursday, and I'm sure Jake would agree somewhere, something is rotten in Denmark. I don't know if it's the writers. I don't know if it's Stephanie and Brian Gewirtz, who get the show later. I don't know if it's Vince. Or some combination of those things. But something, the writers might be writing the most genius things ever, and the agent and the kind of the lead writers are screwing it up. Or the writers are producing garbage, and these guys, you know, the minds of the business, if you will, are doing everything they can to clean them up. But, I mean, there's so many things that go on in WWE where they are almost good. You know, it's the CM Punk story, the Alberto Del Rio initial run. There's just so many times, so many things we've pointed to in the past year and a half where it's almost good. It's good for a minute, and then it loses its way, it falls apart. There's no attention to detail, and this is one of them with having Teddy booking U.S. title matches. His mid-card champion is wrestling, but not defending his title, but he's got to go stick his nose in the other show's mid-card. You're right, it is bizarre. The whole thing about it is obscene. We got the a video that set up the Sin Cara versus Sin Cara match. It had a bunch of news clippings from Spanish newspapers that, while I do not read Spanish, I am willing to bet had absolutely nothing to do with the current storyline. They were certainly about Sin Cara, and they showed Mystico and the new mask and everything else. But it was not about how Hunico was Sin Cara, but then he had to leave. This whole storyline is just screwed up from start to finish. And this video didn't do anything more than point out the giant holes in the story that they have.
Yeah, I mean, and they continue, you know, to send the announce team out there and just act really confused about the whole thing. And, you know, it's difficult for me to understand why you'd have the same crew of guys try to explain to the fans the intricate details of the storyline. Yet at the same time, they're not even sure who the original Sin Cara was. You know, it's just bizarre to me that these guys are supposed to be a source of information, yet at the same time, they're putting out disinformation. So from the perspective of somebody who, you know, who wants to sit down and watch the show as a fan, I don't even know what I'm supposed to think. And when you don't even know how you're supposed to react to the people in the ring, it basically, you know, in the U.S. we've already seen this. You know, these guys have absolutely no heat on either of them whatsoever. You know, fans are cheering the one that's supposed to be the heel, you know, and the other one, you know, the original Sin Cara, Mystico, hardly gets any reaction at all. And, you know, the only reason, you know, like you said earlier, that this particular match that we're going to talk about, you know, was as successful as it was because the fans in Mexico probably already knew what was going on, and they knew who to cheer, and they enjoyed the Lucha Libre style. So this whole thing is the whole story was a disaster.
Yeah, a mess from start to finish. Wade Barrett makes his ring entrance, and after commercial, he cut a promo in the ring. This is what I was talking about. I noticed the second half of the show, I didn't think the audio was as bad, but the first half seemed like they had cut some stuff out because it sounded hollow to me. It said some of the voices kind of echoed to me. Maybe it was just my TV or something, but certainly during this promo, I didn't catch much of it. He said something about having a great Barrett uprising. Did I miss anything major here? I just didn't hear it well.
Yeah, I must have had a better audio feed than you. What I gathered from his promo is that he was speaking about, made the mistake of, you know, trusting to have people around him to help him, you know, carry him through the ranks in WWE. And now he's realized that the only person that's going to take him to the top is himself. And now, you know, and then he said the Barrett Uprising starts tonight, and then they cut away.
Okay. I don't know why I didn't hear it, but I was sitting there listening to him going, wait, what did he say? Just find the remote and turn it up, and then all of a sudden, the Great Barrett Uprising. I'm like, all right, I caught that. But he did go on to our second match of the night, Wade Barrett defeating Daniel Bryan in 5 minutes and 13 seconds. Finish on this came when Barrett had been in control. Bryan had come storming back. He jumped off the top rope, but Barrett caught him on his shoulders and hit Wasteland in the middle of the ring for the pinfall victory. It was a good match. I mean, there's no question about it that these guys put on a really good 5-minute match. Maybe you want to see one 15, 18 minutes in length and see what they could really do. I don't know that we're going to get that, but it made me want for more. Great match to watch in the ring, but give me a reason to care, Jake.
Well, we actually got a pretty decent 15-minute match from these two on a pay-per-view a few months ago. But nobody cared about it then either because there was no storyline. And here we are again. you know, having a very good 5-minute match on a TV show, and nobody has any reason to care about this. I mean, obviously Barrett had just, you know, had that promo air over the, you know, the Tron, but you know, Bryan has been basically a ghost on SmackDown since he won the Money in the Bank briefcase, and I don't know at what point they're going to start, you know, to do something with him. But I mean, you can't send a guy like Barrett out there who has almost no, you know, heat right now due to how he's been dealt out against another guy who's been a ghost on the show and expect them to get over. I mean, they were in Mexico, and both guys, you know, got a decent reaction just because everybody did tonight. But if they would have had this match in Texas, I bet, you know, you could have heard, you know, the arcade machines going off somewhere else in the stadium. I mean, it would have been, a silent affair. So it was a good match, but again, you know, no story. Nobody had any reason to kind of care about it.
Yeah, but I mean, as I wrote in the hit list today, two guys in the indies can get in the ring and organically and totally spontaneously get each other over with their in-ring work. That happens in the indies. It can happen in the indies because you understand that, you know, you see these guys once in a while, or you know, maybe the only, maybe if it's you know, one of these places that's just live events only, you know, you're not going to get any more than what you get there, and so people come in with different expectations. It's a television show, and you know, WWE has told us again and again and again and again, they've preached to us that it's entertainment. So entertain me. Give me a reason to care about these characters, and I will. But it's, you know, Barrett can't get any heat off of beating Bryan because Bryan didn't have any damn heat, and that's kind of the whole point. That there is still plenty of time to build Daniel Bryan, and I don't mind him losing if they do it right, but as you reminded me during the show, hope doesn't cost anything, and that's pretty much all we've got when it comes to Daniel Bryan having the right story told about him as hope. There's no reason to believe that they will, but at this point, it's all I've got to go on because they've just really taken two guys here, and this is what makes the match being so good so frustrating is you see what they can do in the ring. You know, you just had a promo from Wade Barrett. We've always been high on his promo ability. He adapted very quickly to the WWE television style, and he's a guy we've had a lot of, you know, we really wanted to see, and Daniel Bryan is a fan favorite in spite of where they've been booking him. And so when you have all this good stuff there, when you don't give us anything to work with, it just, you know, a good match just points out how frustrating it is. Where are they? I mean, where can they go with these guys? What is there for Barrett to do? How can Barrett get his heat back? How can Bryan get his heat back? I mean, obviously, you can just put them over, guys. But I mean, is there anybody? If this was a legit sport, just for argument's sake, if this was a legit sport, is there anybody out there that you could believe either one of these guys to be?
I mean, not with the way they've been portrayed recently. I mean, it's basically been, you know, they're over whatever the last, you know, match total was. I mean, this is Barrett's first win that I can remember on television in forever, and I think Bryan's last major win, aside from, you know, the Superstars matches that probably, you know, half a dozen people see, was probably a couple of months ago on SmackDown. So there's no reason to believe that that either of these guys could beat anybody if this was, you know, some kind of legit contested sport. But expanding on your earlier point about, you know, the indies and being able to get people over, you know, your two guys being able to get themselves over in the ring together, it's just not, you know, it requires a certain mindset, and people who watch indie wrestling, you know, are looking forward to watching in-ring action. And I think casual WWE fans, you know, they look to be entertained, and while, you know, technical wrestling and watching a hard-fought match in the ring is fun, and it definitely entertains you for the short term. I think WWE fans have been kind of conditioned to disregard most of that unless you have, you know, very intriguing and compelling characters in the ring. And right now, neither of these guys really have that quality. So they have a long way to go to rebuild both of them before any of their matches are going to seem like they matter.
Yeah. And usually they're looking on pay-per-view for those matches as well. After commercial, we had Sheamus making his ring entrance with a video highlighting his match with Del Rio from the previous week with Christian's interference. Zack Ryder was out next to a tepid response. He got a good pop in the back when he popped up in Vicky's face, but didn't get a great response from the crowd when he came out. Dickie had really worked to get some heat tonight. It just shows you how excited that crowd was to see everybody, because pretty much if she can just pop out of the curtain and the place begins to just rain heat down on top of her. And she had to work for it a little bit tonight. Even then, didn't get great heat. But Ziggler did get really good heat, I thought. I thought she introduced him, and he came out. He was the one guy who really got booed tonight, which I think was more of a boo of respect. I mean, this guy is really... he's very impressive right now. Christian was out to lukewarm reaction as well, and then we had our third match tonight. Sheamus and Zack Ryder defeating Christian and Dolph Ziggler with Vicky Guerrero at 3 minutes and 57 seconds. Ryder got a hot tag to Sheamus at about 3 minutes into the match, where Sheamus just ended up killing Ziggler. Hit all his moves. He was setting up for the Irish Cross, but Christian kind of popped up on the ring and then ran when Sheamus went after him. He ran up the ramp. Sheamus was watching him all the way up the ramp, turned around and hit the bro kick on Ziggler. Ziggler took it like a shotgun blast to the face, and Sheamus got the pinfall victory. The purpose of this was to make Sheamus look good, Christian to look like a coward, and for the other two guys to get as much rub off of that as they could going into their pay-per-view match. I disagree that you needed to do it that way. Again, I agree with you that I think that Ziggler-Ryder is a much more intriguing match to watch, because if nothing else, it's at least something different and fresh as opposed to Sheamus and Christian. But this is what they meant to do there, and I thought they did okay. And again, Ziggler just proved in this match why if there's anybody I'll sit through twice in WWE, it's him, right?
Yeah, it's kind of strange that they feel the need to give Sheamus this much every week. I mean, the guy is, he's pretty white hot right now as a competitor. And, everybody knows what to expect from Christian. He's the creepy little bastard. So, it's interesting that they feel the need to, as interesting as it is to watch him kick the crap out of people all the time, because, he is a great brawler type wrestler, and all of his moves look like they hurt, and it's fun to watch him to work out there. But I mean, Ziggler did not need to take this kind of beating from him heading into a title match on the go home show before a pay per view. But I guess this is what we get when WWE treats the mid carders like they're 10 steps away from being anywhere close to guys like Sheamus and Christian. So that was kind of disappointing, but I mean, the action in the match was good. And Sheamus got a great reaction from the crowd, and so did Ziggler. So those have to be positive.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fun match, but yeah, it didn't mean anything. I mean, granted, it did advance a storyline or maintain the storyline, for want of a better term. But it didn't mean a whole lot. There was, like you said, Sheamus didn't need it. Ziggler doesn't need to take that kind of loss going into two paper or going into double match pay per view. Not really impressive looking, especially when you consider after commercial when we came back, we get a video that shows Christian hitting a spear on Sheamus on the stage as Sheamus made his exit from the ring and posed on the ramp for the fans. Christian stuck out and hit the spear. I mean, now he can't even be the damn creepy little bastard on TV. He's got to be the creepy little bastard on tape delay.
During commercial breaks on tape delay, no less.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Back when they showed that, Cody Rhodes was already in the ring and said he got to exercise a demon a couple of weeks ago. Video showed him putting the bag on Orton and doing the crazy last thing that he did. Cody said that Orton had caused him pain both in the ring or with the ring bell, talked about the scar on the side of his head that would probably never heal correctly. The Orton caused him pain with both the ring bell and when he was in Legacy. He said he was loyal to Orton, and Orton repaid that with a kick to the head as soon as he didn't need him anymore. He said the pain that he had caused, he said Orton had discarded him after all of that, and that he demanded that Orton come to the ring and apologize and admit his mistake for believing that Cody had no value and for turning his back on Cody, because Cody had now proved that he was worthy because of what he had done with Orton and putting the bag over his head. Orton's music hit, and the place came completely unglued when he came out. He just got a great reaction from the Mexican crowd. Orton cut his same super intense promo that I grow weary of more and more every time I see it. Said that The only mistake that he had ever made was allowing Cody to continue to breeze after costing him the title not once but twice. It's always nice to hear Orton make a murder comment. I think this is the second or third time in the past month he's talked about killing somebody. He said the pain that he had caused Cody would be nothing like he would cause him at Vengeance. And he said it was time for a little preview. He had been walking in the ring the entire time. The Badgers ran around and attacked him and allowed Cody to get in a cheap shot. They fought on the floor with Orton taking a post shot. As soon as they rolled in the ring after being slammed into the hard steel ring post, Orton popped right back up and attacked Cody. He ended up doing nothing more to Cody than really just punching on him. The Baggers took all the brunt of the work tonight. He hit the rope DDT on one Bagger, and that thing was rough looking. That guy went straight down. Instead of kind of going down face first, he went down on the top of his head. Another Bagger, they ended up back on the floor again, he and Cody. He tried to curb stomp Cody on the stairs, but one of the other Bagger guy ended up stopping him, and so he got curb stomped on the stairs. And then Cody fled with the title belt and stood up the ramp while Orton stood up the original Bagger, the guy he had DDT'd, and hit an RKO on him, and then just posed in the ring, standing over that guy to go into commercial. Cody's promo, I thought was okay. Yeah. The problem is that it was his character is. And the way he delivers is not getting over great in English-speaking arenas. I don't know. I have no clue how many people in the arena could understand English, obviously. But, you know, that promo takes, I mean, there's a language barrier. And it's already, he's got a problem getting over that character as it is anyway. I know Vince McMahon thinks it's the greatest thing ever. I've been high on it. I thought when he started it, there was something there. It hasn't progressed as well as I wanted. I thought he did an okay job here, but the crowd was mostly crickets for it because I think it was hard for a lot of them to understand. And because it's just, A, the language barrier, B, the nature of how his promos kind of go, I thought it was very much so a Chris Jericho ripoff with the use of some of the big words and whatnot. But more than anything else, what annoyed me about this was just Randy Orton's rage, 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 kill, kill, kill. I mean, I catch a lot of heat for it on the net from people, but you know, he reminds me a lot of Davey Richards. And Davey Richards is a guy who has two settings, on and oh my freaking God. And Orton is kind of that in a different way. He has no nuance to his character. Cody has too much nuance, and Orton doesn't have enough. And together what you get is this real contrast. I'm happy that Cody's getting this rub, but, you know, they're not going for the Intercontinental Championship, so that makes that title even more meaningless than it was. Cody's, you know, part of this whole gimmick is building up this title. Orton's not even willing to challenge for it, so why do I care about it? I mean, there's, you know, again, it's good for Cody to get that rub and to be sitting towards the top. This is the second or third week now that he's been on at the top of the hour at the fifth quarter. Which is usually when the show does a big uptick in ratings, and so he's definitely getting the good hard look from everybody. But I don't know that it's coming across all that well. I don't know that a feud with Orton is the smart thing to do here. What about you?
Yeah, I guess I don't have much to add to what you said, because I agree with just about all of it. But, you know, I think, you know, Orton physically is very good. You know, I like what he does in the ring. But I sincerely question the motivation behind putting two of your most monotonous and potentially boring promos in a feud together. Just because you got one guy who, you know, in Rhodes, who goes out there and talks for, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 minutes, who, you know, has almost no inflection in his voice at all. And then you have Orton come out and, you know, and Cody obviously is supposed to be the heel here, and then you have Orton come out as the face and cut basically the same monotonous heel promo that Cody just cut, except he gets cheered for it. And I, you know, it's working, obviously, because Orton's getting huge reactions, and, you know, the fans do boo Cody in the U.S., less so in Mexico last night, but they do boo him in the U.S., so, I mean, it is working to some degree, but I don't know if, you know, Cody is really going to grow much out of this feud, just because it doesn't seem like his character has changed at all since, you know, he had that feud with Mysterio around WrestleMania time. So it's been a, I just question the decision to put these two together, because they're so, you know, these characters, despite, you know, the... you know, the different places where they reside on the ladder of success in WWE are pretty similar at this point.
Yeah, that's true too. It was I don't know. It's, I mean, I think they're probably going to give us a hell of a match on Sunday, but I, again, how much do I care about it? I'm also interested to see if they do the right thing. Cody needs to win here. Orton will not suffer in the least from a loss. He will not suffer in the least from a clean loss. My fear is that they put Cody over, but then Orton ends up beating him to death again with a ring bell or something ridiculous like that. I'm concerned about this feud certainly going forward. I think Cody deserves it, and Orton, you know, I could go out there and pin Orton. I'm nobody, and Orton would be able to bounce right back from it. And Randy Orton, for Christ's sake. It's, you know, that's kind of the thing you get that WWE, I think, always seems to forget, is when you build these guys up this big and they're just hot no matter what. They're hot no matter what, so use that to your advantage. But after commercial, we got what was certainly the main event for the crowd, but not the main event of the show. Sin Cara, the Mystico version, Sin Cara Azul, I guess, defeating Sin Cara Negro, Unico version, in a mask versus mask match. It's 13 minutes and 20 seconds. This match had me the most concerned, because we've seen botches from both of these guys. I thought that they went in there and completely left it all in the ring for their hometown crowd. I think they did a great job. I really wanted to be into this match, but there's the story leading up to it has been god-awful. What they've done with it on the show was god-awful. But I don't want to take anything away from what they did in the ring. I thought it was great in ring. But there was just, the crowd, the near fall at the very end, and I guess maybe I should get the finish on this. We had, Unico went to the top, but Mystico caught him and hit a Hurricane Rana. Unico was, so they kind of traded back and forth. Unico would hit a Samoan Slam. He went to the top. Mystico caught him up there, hit a Hurricane Rana. He followed for a senton for a near fall. The crowd just went nuts over, which I thought was great. Then Mystico went for the spinning flying head scissor thing, that Mickey James does and whatnot, and, you know, where they just spin around. But then he did something neat. He spun out of it, grabbed the arm, and so it ended up kind of being a shoulder breaker that went to the ground, and he pulled it back behind for something like a hammer. I mean, you're the MMA guy. You know the names better than I do. I don't know what the exact name for it is, but he did look like he hurt all. I'm sorry.
Yeah, also the last part of the finish was a Fujiwara armbar.
Okay, so Fujiwara armbar was the finish of it.
Yeah.
Sin Cara Negro passed out. And we're going to do a match here in a second, but just quickly your thoughts on the match itself. And I think we've talked enough about the story, but I thought I was worried about these two, and they went out there and said, hey, there was no reason to worry about us. We're fine.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't look like there was too much editing. I mean, there might have been some. I'm trying to recall if there was a commercial break in the middle of the match. I think there was at least one, right?
Yes, there was one. Yeah, they came back about halfway.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if there was too much editing there, but I mean, it's possible. But I mean, there wasn't any obvious botches. You know, there weren't any major mistakes that made you kind of groan at home. But I didn't really care with the storyline, but just in the moment, the match was very good. The crowd was into it, and the finish was hot. So, I mean, it's hard for me to find too many things to pick apart about it. And most of the things you would pick on about it have nothing to do with the talent involved. It was just, you know, the horrible way it's been booked up to this point has been the real problem. But I was pleasantly surprised by the match, and I thought the finish was well done. And, despite that weird, strange, and out team bar at the end of the match, I thought it was very good.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Post-match, it was supposed to be that Unico, Sin Cara Negro, was going to take the mask off. He obviously didn't want to do it. Mystico grabbed him. They ended up battling, and Mystico ends up snatching it off. We get a chance to see Unico's face, and Booker T, well, he shit the bed like it was when they unmasked Kane. He was like, oh my God! And Michael Cole, who those two together just make me want to claw. I mean, I look, my wife has now officially hit the ice pick because I've tried to jab it in my eardrum several times. But Cole looking at him and going, what? It's a guy with a, it's a normal guy with a crew cut. Just made Booker T's continue. I mean, from there, Booker just went on to, oh, but he's hideous. Look at that. And when they did the replay, like, look, that's what I'm talking about. Look at him. He's hideous. And just going on and on. It made him seem that much more stupid. Now, I want to be clear right here and say there is no question in my mind that Booker T is not that stupid and that he is playing a character. But that begs the question more than anything else. Why? What is the purpose of having a buffoon, not a funny guy like, say, a Bobby the Brain Heenan, who would say silly stuff, who would punk people, but do it in a way that always seemed to kind of tie in to what was going on. He was always very smart about this. That guy is okay. Even though Heenan, I thought at times, could be over the top, that guy I'm okay with. But the Village Idiot? Why would you give the Village Idiot the microphone?
Yeah, who knows? It didn't really ruin anything. It just made me just kind of shake my head. I mean, it didn't ruin the finish because, you know, the unmasking was done and the crowd had already popped big for it before, you know, Booker completely lost his mind. But I don't know if it's like some kind of Art Donovan thing. You know, I don't know if you have ever seen the clips of Art Donovan calling a WWE match, but you know, it's that kind of stupid. I mean, you know, somebody who is completely unfamiliar with the sport, you know, doesn't have a whole you know, a whole grasp of what's going on in the ring or the fact that he's part of a television show. You know, it's just somebody who's out there, you know, just doing stream of consciousness nonsense. You know, that it really doesn't necessarily even apply in storyline. I mean, most of the stuff the guy says has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on in the ring. You know, it doesn't add anything to any of the talent or the storylines they're involved in. It's just, you know, I think he's out there just because his you know, shit just makes Vince laugh. I mean, that's really the only thing I could think of as to why you'd have somebody out there that's just a, you know, playing a character that what amounts to just a complete moron being part of your announce team. And the sad part is him and Cole, you know, the least entertaining parts of the show dominate the commentary. And then, you know, poor Josh Matthews, who is actually fairly competent in his job, spends most of the show silent. So, you know, the three-man announce team thing isn't working, and the only competent part of this announce crew is silent for most of the show.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Jason has talked about before that Josh Matthews just doesn't have a personality, and which I think is a fair judgment, but I mean, how do you get a personality with those two idiots going at it all the time? I mean, how do you stand out from, oh, he left a skid mark on that boy's head, and I just lobbed you a softball, and you didn't do anything with it. How do you overcome that garbage that's around you all the time? And they were in rare form on this show. It was unbelievably bad. But, yeah, this was – I mean, this just aggravated the crap out of me. It didn't ruin anything, obviously. It wasn't like that, but it's just – like I said, if I thought Booker T was stupid, then I would be like, well, okay, that's what you get for putting a moron out there. But he's not a moron. You don't make it to where he made it in this business and not have some semblance of intelligence, because this place, you know, it'll eat you up. And I don't understand. Like, I understand finding makes Vince laugh, but he's got to be. People all over have to be going, why is this dude talking? The uniqueness of having Booker T on commentary is gone. It's over. There's nothing. There's no reason left to care about this guy anymore. He just goes up there and plays a character of himself. I mean, and in a lot of ways, I think does himself a lot of disservice because so many people buy in. You know, once you reach that commentary booth, people will forgive you for being a heel. They go, oh, well, that's what he's supposed to be. That's his character. But if you sound like a dimwit, I think people, once you reach that level, I think people think that Michael Cole, and of course, stories seem to indicate this, but I think most people would believe Michael Cole is kind of a tool douchebag. And I think most people who are listening now think that Booker T's probably just kind of functionally illiterate, and I don't know why you would put yourself out there like that. I mean, I guess the check's good, and it beats being Mick Foley and getting screamed at in the ear, but, I mean, would you go out there and make yourself look like a fool for that?
You know, I probably, it depends on how big the check was, but, you know, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I'd have a hard time going out there week after week and making an idiot out of myself, but, you know, I'm sure you know, Booker probably is getting all the reassurance that he needs backstage. You know, people telling him that he's funny and entertaining, and they want to stick with it. But you know, for people, you know, who have a grasp on, you know, what the sport used to be and what, you know, announcing can add to the product, you know, it just seems like you know, you're doing the whole show a disservice by putting a character out there who basically just makes a mockery of his job, and that's just kind of sad to me. But I guess they find it funny and entertaining, but it's, you know, I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on that.
After commercial, we had the Brodus Clay hype video. The video is well done. My big concern is they seem to be just kind of making him Mark Henry Jr. to some degree. I mean, there's certainly some difference between the two characters. Henry's more about 15 years of doing the right thing and not getting him anywhere, so now he's got to act this way, whereas Brodus just comes across as a mean SOB. I still think they wasted the opportunity of a lifetime. I still think that promo at the end of NXT where he lost season four, I guess it was, whichever season it was, the season that he lost, he cuts this promo about, I am the thing that goes bump in the night, I am the thing you're afraid you'll bump into in a dark alley somewhere. I mean, that set him up perfectly. It's one of the best promos I've ever heard. It's probably the best promo he'll ever cut in his entire career. But, I mean, do you think they're doing a good job of setting him up at this point? Are you seeing him as Mark Henry Jr., or do you think they've got something else going?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think you could bring him in as any other character. I mean, it's the best fit for him. You know, I guess they'll have to do their best to differentiate himself from Henry when he comes onto television. But, you know, there's only so many characters a guy, you know, with his attitude and his size can play. You know, so I'm kind of excited to see what they do when they bring him back. You know, I think if they can keep him and Henry away from each other, that they can, you know, they can do something interesting with both of them. You know, if Clay ends up getting moved to Raw, I mean, or spending most of his time on Raw due to this Super Show stuff that they've been doing, I guess so be it. But, you know, I think there's a lot of potential there. Like you said, that promo at the end of NXT Season 4 was pretty awesome, and, you know, it set him apart from, you know, just about anybody who's been on that show from a promo standpoint. So I like what they've been doing with him. You know, I like his character. I like his upside a lot, and I look forward to seeing what he can do on TV.
Yep. I'm interested to see what they do. They've got a real opportunity with him. Then we had Beth and Natty in the ring, and they were all dolled up and dressed like Barbie dolls, and I was kind of surprised that I... Well, that's a conversation for another day, but I just can't get over the fact that they spend all this time calling everybody else Barbie dolls, and that every time we see them, they seem to be wanting to dress more and more like Barbie dolls. I assume that's on purpose, but I don't know what the point is there exactly. But they said that they were not mad, they were not jealous of the Barbie doll divas. They were not mad at them either. They were mad at the WWE Universe for wanting to see that type of diva. They showed video of Beth hitting the glam slam on Kelly Kelly, and then Natalya putting her new submission hold, which they call Pin Up Strong, which is the hashtag they're using on Twitter to talk about each other and about what makes them different from the other divas. And also video of Natty putting it on Alicia Fox, sometimes having, you know, Beth there with the mic and making the girls cry and whatnot. Beth put it over something that they really like to hear, and that in Vengeance it was going to be Eve's turn to cry. Eve's music hit, and she came to the ring. She said that she used to think Natty and Beth were beautiful women, but now they've gotten ugly in their bitterness. She wanted to be clear, though. There had been some confusion, and she wanted to be clear. She was not a Barbie doll. Beth got in her face and said, you know, really, you're not a Barbie, you're not a Barbie, you're not a Barbie. And then Eve shoved her. Beth hit the ground. Her top she almost had a wardrobe malfunction up top. She apparently did have a wardrobe malfunction on the bottom of her dress. I have made the joke that that little piece of film right there would be combed over more than the Zapruder film to see if we did get a malfunction up top. But apparently no nip slip. Nothing's been emailed to me yet. Usually I get those emails. Thank you, Fantasia. And then Eve just kind of left the ring and left Beth kind of holding everything in place. I actually laughed out loud. I don't think that was the emotion that they were going for, but for me, it was the funniest moment of the show. I mean, I literally just laughed out. My family looked at me and go, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, that was that was just kind of funny watching Beth seem to have these problems. But, I mean, this obviously the Divas are in rough shape again, as we've talked about before now, but really? I mean, obviously they couldn't have been trying to get me to laugh, could they, Jake? They had to be trying to do something else.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, aside from the end result of this, the point was, you know, that Natty and Beth were kind of doing their mean girls shtick, you know, where they were talking about how they're, you know, they're the superior athletes, and, you know, they think the way that they carry themselves, you know, they're kind of going for that pin-up era kind of dress and clothing, you know, to set themselves apart from the, you know, the bikini tops and bottoms that the other Divas tend to wear out to the ring. You know, they're trying to represent a different type of female wrestler. And, you know, Eve, you know, is trying to kind of separate herself from that as well for whatever reason. And then Beth got in her face and it turned into kind of a Monty Python moment where, you know, the funniest thing about that whole segment was not the fact that, you know, Beth almost fell out of her outfit, but just the look of sheer terror on her face when she realized what was happening to her. Because it was just like, oh my God, I cannot believe this just happened. But, yeah, I think it must have been part of the back of her dress or something, or a strap or something that snapped, because when she got back up to her feet and kind of rearranged herself, Natty was holding on to her back. So I thought maybe the back of her dress had split or something bizarre had happened. But, you know, it was an okay segment. I mean, it didn't really sell me on the match at the pay-per-view, but it was definitely the most unintentionally funny moment on a wrestling show in quite some time.
Yeah, it was. I will give them credit. We have seen much worse from the Divas. This one was not terribly bad. Eve usually puts me right to sleep on the microphone. I thought she did okay tonight. Yeah, everything to me all that in that moment though was lost when she went down. And you're right, just the look on her face, and she kind of lets you get her chest a little bit. And like at first, I don't think she knew whether or not she had popped out. My wife has told me that there are lots of tricks with spray cans and double-sided tape and things like that that will keep things. You couldn't move them if you had to. But still, you're right. Just the look on her face was fantastic. And, you know, we'll see what we get out of them after or at the pay-per-view. Eve is someone who has great athleticism. Beth is someone who can carry women to great matches. I'm interested to see what they can do. I'm sure they've mixed up before, but I just don't ever have any memory of it. Interested to see, you know, if they're able to put on a good match for us or not. But it's still the Divas, and even though the in-ring work has gotten better under Dustin Rhodes' command, I just don't think the storytelling is doing anything at all. After commercial, we had our Ricardo Rodriguez introduction of Alberto Del Rio. Big Show was out next to a great pop. And our fifth and final match of the night, Big Show defeated Alberto Del Rio with Ricardo Rodriguez by disqualification at 12 minutes and 50 seconds. Pretty much so, this match was Big Show pick up Del Rio, throw him around. Big Show pick up Del Rio, throw him around. Big Show pick up Del Rio, throw him around. Wash, rinse, repeat. At the end, we ended up with Del Rio. He ended up hitting a kind of an arm breaker while Big Show was on his knees. And then he went to lock in the cross arm breaker and ended up doing it from behind. It didn't even look like it hurt. You know, and I realize most of the time these things don't hurt, but at least, you know, take the pin-up strong submission. If you really look at it, you realize it doesn't hurt. But, you know, it looks like it does. I mean, from the right angle, you're like, God, that sucks. This didn't even look like, I mean, Big Show just felt like he had his hand laying on Del Rio's chest. It was really bad. He finally flips over, picks Del Rio up, slams him down, and then Ricardo Rodriguez jumps on his back, causing the disqualification. Big Show ends up throwing Rick Rod off of his back, punches him in the face for a knockout punch, punches Del Rio in the face for a knockout punch, grabs the ring to kind of throw the ropes to steady himself, which allows Mark Henry to run out, slide in the ring, and get knocked out before the pay-per-view. I mean, yes, Big Show knocked out Mark Henry right in the middle of the ring with one punch going into the pay-per-view. That was what we were left with, Big Show standing tall at the end of the show. Jake, I'll let you take this one first. That right there made you can't wait to see Big Show versus Mark Henry now, right?
No, that was awful. I mean, The part that bothers me the most about it isn't that Henry hit the, or excuse me, Big Show hit the knockout punch. It's that ever since, you know, Big Show's returned to TV, he's done nothing but just beat the crap out of Mark Henry. And, you know, Henry being the strong heel, I mean, that's really, you know, the focus of his character has been his physical dominance. And, you know, he's been able to exert that over Morrison and people away from this feud. But, I mean, the fact that he's never actually gotten his hands on Show to prove to anyone that there's a possibility that he could beat him just kind of ruins the whole thing for me. I mean, where's the drama in this? I mean, if you were, you know, if you were a fan, you know, looking to make a prediction for Sunday, I mean, I don't know, you know, if you were an odds maker, possibly even, would there be any reason why you would choose Mark Henry at this point? I mean, we've seen, you know, a fresh Mark Henry storm out to the ring, rush into the ring in one punch, and he's literally unconscious from the Big Show. I mean, and that's after Big Show had just wrestled a 12-minute match and supposedly had one injured arm. And yet still, you know, leaning against the ropes and throwing a, you know, with no, you know, with no momentum or weight shift, just kind of lopped out a jab and knock out Mark Henry cold. I mean, it was just the stupidest close to a go-home show that I can remember in a long time. And on top of that, the match was terrible. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, Big Show had just had a barn burner with Alberto Del Rio. I mean, they basically, you know, it was like bumper cars out there. I don't even know what the hell they were doing. It was one of the dumbest booked matches that I can remember. It was just, you know, Del Rio selling for 12 minutes, and then he locked on whatever the hell that submission was. Definitely wasn't a cross arm breaker. It looked like something they would have to do to Big Show at a massage parlor to stretch out his shoulder. I mean, it was the dumbest thing that, you know, we've ever seen on a SmackDown since I've been doing audio with you. It was just, I don't know, the whole thing was just dumb. I can't even, there's nothing to really say beyond that.
Yeah, it started bad and went downhill. Like, it was awful at the very beginning. The first thing we get is Booker T going, "Well, you gotta watch out for Big Show. He's got that right hand and he's got that left hand." Thank you for filling us in with that, Booker. And then the first thing they do out of the bell, I mean, they're in opposite corners. The bell rings. Show goes to dart in. Del Rio looks like he's going to dart under his shoulder, but either goes to the wrong side or didn't go far enough, and so he kind of bumps into Big Show, and then they just kind of look at each other, and then Show grabs him and just throws him, and, like, it never got going, and then it was just awful from there forward. And everything you said I 100% agree with. Let me ask you this, though. What is the sense in having Big Show do a 13-minute match right before a pay-per-view? I mean, as in, like, 2 days before a pay-per-view. Big Show is limited. That's fine. I'm not bagging on the guy. He's big. He's, you know, he's something you go see. He's the feature. He's, you know, he's not a guy that's going to go out there and wow you in the ring. He just has to do enough to get by. And so I'm not bagging on the guy when I say he's got no moveset, but he's got no moveset. After about 7 minutes, you've seen all that Big Show can do, and you need to start working towards the finish at that point. Instead, we get a 13-minute match with no discernible finish. We get a screwy finish on it, and now we've got to go in and wrestle Mark Henry. I mean, the more you see of Big Show, he gets overexposed faster than anybody. He and Kali are the two guys. But you go out there, you see him for 5 minutes, and then you don't need to see him again for like 2 months, but you know exactly what you're going to get from him. And now we're going to get, you know, 30 minutes of Big Show over 2 days. Do you think that was a good idea?
No, definitely not. I don't even know why we couldn't have gotten a tag match out of this. I mean, where was Cena tonight? I mean, they had both champions on this show. You know, Big Show was out there at a match. I don't know why we couldn't have a tag match to limit the amount of time Big Show spends in the ring, because you're absolutely right. He's already overexposed. People know exactly what to expect from him. You know, this is not the Big Show of, you know, 15 years ago where he was, you know, jumping off the top rope and hitting elbow drops and doing drop kicks. I mean, this is a guy whose weight has taken a toll on him, you know, as it would for anybody of his size. So, you know, there's a way to accentuate his strength and his positives, and this is absolutely not the way they should have done it.
Yeah, you're right. They could have done a 13-minute tag match where Show gets about 3 minutes of that time, most of it in the House of Fire spot at the end, and you don't feel like, you know, when you see him on Sunday, you feel like it's something totally different. I mean, what I'm expecting is just more garbage from him and Mark Henry, which is a shame. Henry, you know, is a guy who was able to get a good match out of Zeke. He was able to get a good match out of the show. They were very inspired the last time they worked. I mean, they may go out with surprises, but you just don't feel real good about it, do you, sitting there watching it? I mean, it was, as you said, it was probably the worst way to end a go-home show going in. You know, like you said, the worst way to end a go-home pay-per-view show. It's Vengeance is in tough shape right now, and so I asked the question just to kind of as a premonition type moment for you. Rock comes back in a month for Survivor Series. We're going to see him on the Go Home Raw just prior to Survivor Series, but he will make an in-ring debut there. As bad as the product is right now, with Rock showing up, Jason and I talked about this extensively. With Rock showing up, the hope is that, yes, you get all these people to tune in and see for Rock. That's purpose A. The purpose B, and it should be really more like A and 1A, is having something for people to stay around for. Rock goes away in a month. And not only does he come in a month, he goes away in a month. So you got to have something for people to lay over for. Obviously, they don't have anything right now. Do you think there's enough time? Do they have enough core stories built up, enough history that they can pull into or reach into to create compelling storylines to get people to hang out for Rock after next month's pay-per-view?
It's going to be difficult. I mean, I'm assuming that most of the stories that are going to that are on the show right now are going to be pretty close to concluding at Vengeance. So I'm assuming they're going to have to start from scratch. You know, they might continue the whole thing with, you know, Punk and Hunter against you know, Laurinaitis and whatever powers that be that are pulling the strings there. But the rest of them, I'm assuming we're just going to hit the reset button again. I mean, there's nothing compelling going on right now. So if the goal is to have something exciting to kind of couple with, you know, the Rock's return, you know, possibly having some other storylines that you want to showcase while you have the extra fans tuning in to watch the Rock, they're going to definitely have to start, you know, this coming Monday. And, you know, have something planned over a four-week period that's going to bring people in. And, you know, hyping the Rock will help with that. But they can't be doing this, you know, I'm out of the office this week booking where, you know, they just kind of mail these things in like we saw this past week in Mexico where neither show really felt like a big deal despite the fact that, you know, these are the first shows from Mexico City and where these are the last two shows before a major, you know, what's supposed to be a major show, a pay-per-view. So there's going to need to be a renewed drive in WWE if they want to attract people heading into Survivor Series because it's a pretty brutal product right now.
Could not agree more, and I will be back on Sunday for WWE Vengeance full review and results, as well as the After Audio Show. Jake will be joining me again, and remember, that will be exclusively for our members. So if you want to check out that audio, then definitely head on over to ProWrestling.net. Right side of the page, sign up for the members section, $7.50 a month to try it for 30 days, $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. Access to that audio on Sunday night, all the audio, again, most recently, just the other day, Friday, actually, a interview between Jason Powell and Justin Credible, PJ Polacco, talking about the ESPN E60 piece that was done on Scott Hall. If you haven't seen it, that's up on the site as well. Access to all the audio each week, .net members forum, .net members blog section, and, of course, the ad-free version of the site. We will be back on Sunday for more. Until then, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for supporting ProWrestling.net. Check out the members page and join Jake and I again Sunday night for WWE Vengeance. Everyone have a great weekend. Take care.